Welcome to the Municipal Voice, CCM's radio podcast in collaboration with WNHHLP 103.5 FM, connecting Connecticut's municipalities. We are your source for news on the municipal level across the state of Connecticut. I'm your host, Matt Ford, and in the studio with me today is Kurt Miller, First Selectman of Seymour, and Dale Bruckhart from Digital Back Office. Today, we're going to be talking about the technology and the growing need to protect our information. But first, we have First Selectman Miller here. And you recently ran, I believe, for the first time for a state-level office. Is that correct?
Yes, I ran for a state comptroller.
And the incumbent, obviously, is still there. But during that process, as your first statewide office, did you come to new perspectives on the relationship between municipalities like Seymour and the state?
Yeah, it's very different, the race, the one I'm used to running for Seymour. I mean, Seymour has its own specific issues. Running statewide, you have to expand those issues out for not just small towns, but things that impact big cities, you know, different parts of the state of Connecticut. So it was very interesting to become exposed to a lot of that and then put a platform and a campaign together based on that.
So. Yeah. I imagine in doing that, you met with a lot of people and heard a lot of their concerns. Is there anything you think, you know, you would like to see, both as someone who was doing that and also as a municipal leader, Kevin Limbaugh, who is the comptroller, to address, and maybe the administration in general? Like, what issues in your mind should they be looking at?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue facing all the towns and cities in Connecticut is taxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, having stable finances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've already seen that the governor has given the governor-elect a blueprint of what he should do or what he should consider with the upcoming budget. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, reducing municipal aid, placing the expense of teacher pensions on the towns and cities.
Which CCM is not a fan of.
Yeah, no, definitely not. No. You know, while at that level they talk about that not being a tax increase, that's a massive tax increase on towns and cities.
Because the money has to come from somewhere.
Right. So, I mean, that's the one thing. Yeah. I think, you know, giving or running for statewide office, I think, has given me a better perspective on how I can do my job as an officer of CCM a little bit better, a member of the executive board.
Yes.
You know, I think I understand the plight of, you know, Montville versus Greenwich, you know, versus Hartford, you know, three different communities, three different needs, but all kind of talking and needing the same thing.
Essentially,
yeah. So I think it's, you know, it's given me a good perspective, good advantage, and it was a worthwhile experience. It was
great.
Well, sad I lost, but,
you know. I somehow don't think we've seen the last of you in that arena, have we?
Well, it's, I don't know.
You don't know? You don't want to talk to that one right now?
Yeah, I'm very happy being First Selectman of Seymour. It's something I always wanted to do. You know, I'm
a small
town guy.
Being the First Selectman of Seymour, the main reason we had you and Dale on today is to talk about IT security issues.
Yes.
So thank you for being with us, Dale.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you're from, a little bit closer to the mic there, but you're coming to us from Digital Back Office. Can you tell us just briefly what it is that Digital Back Office does and also in relation to townships?
Digital Back Office is actually part of a company called Advanced Corporate Networking, a privately held company based in Milford with two data centers, one in Norwalk and one in Stamford, Connecticut.
Yep.
We started out basically as an IT services company in 1991. Back then, the business involved selling a lot of PCs and installing them and putting them on a network.
Yeah.
But it quickly evolved into more of a managed services business.
Okay.
The company ownership and the management team early on decided that it didn't make a lot of sense to put technicians behind the wheel of a car and have them drive all over the state to fix a problem that could easily be fixed remotely from a proper network operations center. So that's how we've evolved and sort of morphed into a managed services business.
Well, that's great. And can you tell me a little about what you do with towns?
With Seymour, the relationship there started well over 10 years ago with the Seymour Public Schools.
Okay.
Where we actually built out a fiber optic network to connect all of the remote schools back to the high school, which allowed them to deliver high-speed internet service to all to every student in the district. And that since then has evolved into a much broader relationship with both the public schools and the town. And they're also an interesting case in that they have elected to merge their IT departments between the town and the school district together into okay. one.
And that's unusual?
Well, it still is, yes. Yeah. A lot of, I've been in school districts and towns where I've literally introduced the IT manager from the town to their counterpart in their local school district because they'd never talked to each other.
Well, it sounds like, and it was combining this coming from your side of things, wanting to do the school district and the town together?
Well, you know, there's the big talk about regionalization.
Yeah.
You know, it's something big, that CCM right pushes now. A lot. Yeah. But, you know, it's difficult sometimes bringing towns together based on union issues and mm-hmm. things like that. But, you know, we started to look internally, things that the Board of Ed offered, things that the town offered, and how we can combine strengths yeah. to make operations better for each person.
Yeah, I imagine there's a cost savings.
Oh, that's absolutely.
The main reason to do something like that, yeah.
Absolutely. We had a consultant that would come in and kind of do the break-fix mm-hmm. things, as Dan was mentioning, but wasn't truly a part of the team.
Wasn't getting proactive, wasn't addressing right. things before they came up.
Yeah, so we were able to make yeah. this arrangement with the Board of Education. We brought Rob Dyer in, who was the IT director for the Board of Ed.
Mm-hmm.
He now started sitting in a lot of our strategic planning
okay.
sessions, getting to know the needs on the municipal side, and within a year was able to basically flip the town upside down and redo all the technology with the help of Dale and his team. And you know, we're providing much better service mm-hmm. To our employees at a substantially cheaper cost.
And so, like, what sort of services are you offering? Is this through the website? Like, can people pay taxes through the website?
Well, we can do things like that, but mm-hmm. for us, it was a lot of the back office.
Okay, stuff. So it was more the internal stuff right. within Town Hall.
Yeah, just, you know, simple things like our phone system.
Yep.
You know, we now share that internet access. You know, we're on fiber, things like that. And then yeah. I know something that we're going to talk about, but is just the way that we protect our data.
Yeah.
The way that we protect our systems. You know, we're kind of state yeah. of the art with that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of places are a little behind on that mm-hmm. mindset. And, you know, there's the idea that, you know, you insure your buildings, you insure, you know, against damages, whatever, because they're assets. At the same time, all that information, people's, you know, social security numbers, everything that you hold about people in your town, that information is also an asset.
Right.
And, you know, what do we do to protect that?
And it's something you don't even think about. We had the Cisco system at the time, which mm-hmm. everyone would say, you know, is the state of the art, the best thing that there was yep. out there. And, you know, when Dale brought Palo Alto in to just kind of talk to us
yeah.
about that, they said, listen, all we're going to do is we're going to set our firewall up behind Cisco. That's yep. it. And then just leave it for a couple of days and see what happens. And it was incredible what was coming through. And
so there's stuff that was getting through Cisco
yeah.
that was then getting caught by their firewall.
Correct.
Yeah, not to necessarily pick on Cisco, but what's happened in the industry, mm-hmm. of course, as we all use the internet every day, and we all use portable devices, and we all use social media sites.
Yeah,
the bad guys out there on the internet are way ahead of us. They are using tools, and they're taking a different tact in terms of how to penetrate yeah. networks and identify information that they can either steal or hold you for ransom.
Yeah.
So the legacy products, I would call the Cisco firewall that they were using in Seymour, sort of a legacy product, was probably built and designed 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The world's changed.
Yeah.
The internet's changed.
Like new threats, new...
Well, new threats. Most of your firewall technology, legacy technology, was based upon what they called a port.
Okay.
You would open a port on a device that would either allow everything to come through that port or not.
Yeah.
You closed it. What's happened today is most of your internet traffic, first of all, is encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have the ability to open up the data packets that are coming through your firewall and look and see what's inside,
yeah.
anybody can hide anything inside those.
So you have no way to know that it's
all coming in through the internet. Right. It's all encrypted. So unless you have a way to actually de-encrypt it and decide whether the traffic, the data traffic that's coming in is bad or good.
Yeah.
It's all going to be just.
So is decrypting it, is that something that happens with the firewall that
correct.
You put in
Seymour? That's correct. It can decrypt it, look at the packet, make a decision whether it's malicious,
mm-hmm.
Possibly a virus, some sort of virus payload that's being delivered yeah. to the network. And at that point, it can just stop it and prevent it. If it's questionable,
yeah.
One of the things we like about the Palo Alto platform is it actually sends it up to a cloud-based, you know, we call it a sandbox,
mm-hmm.
Where it actually looks at it and makes a decision within less than 5 minutes. Is it good? Is it bad? If it's bad, prevent it. If it's good, then you let it go through. So, and that's the change that, that's why Palo Alto calls themselves a next generation firewall.
Yeah.
As opposed to differentiate themselves from some of these earlier legacy.
Some first generation ones.
Right.
So when you put this in and saw this in Seymour, what sort of attacks did you catch? Like what are people targeting towns with?
What they do is, in many cases, I always equate it to, you know, a burglar casing the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they'll plant something on a PC or a device inside your network, including printers. Printers can be vulnerable as well. And it could sit there for months until it receives some sort of communication from the outside that says, you know, go do this or grab this file or, you know, we've seen a potential vulnerability mm-hmm. on the network because of weak passwords or something like that. And at that point, it will execute a command that it's told to do from, you know, from the outside. It's called it's a command and control type of thing.
So it's not like someone opened their email and they get a virus and that day the system crashes.
Could
happen.
Absolutely.
But it could also be something that someone had done 6 months
sitting,
ago.
Exactly. It could have been sitting on your network
just waiting for that
months.
Opportunity to get they're after.
Exactly right. So the challenge today is that a lot of the viruses that are introduced, mm-hmm. the traditional sort of antivirus software that we all probably have put on our PCs or devices, relies upon a technology that says you have to know what the signature of that virus is in order to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the viruses that are introduced today are called zero day. In other words, they might be introduced in 30 seconds and then disappear.
Yeah.
So unless you have the ability to understand the process that they're using, the methods that they're using to introduce the virus, there's no way to stop it because there's no signature.
You have to know how it's coming at you to be able to block it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I mean, we're talking about computer problems, whatever, but these have some very serious real world ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
One case that came up in Atlanta in March of this year, they were attacked by ransomware and they demanded a $52,000 ransom, the hackers. Atlanta chose not to pay, and you know we're not paying criminals or anything like that. But then the result is that the attack went through, they shut them down, and it's going to probably end up costing the city somewhere in the neighborhood of $17 million.
That's right.
Yep.
So, you know, understandably, they balked at the thought of a criminal demanding money, but the question then comes, I guess, do you stick to your principle and lose $17 million, or do you bite the bullet, spend $52,000 to pay them off and then get authorities chasing them down?
Well, that's right. And you don't even have to go to Atlanta. There was a recent story in the local press here about mm-hmm. West Haven.
Yeah, West Haven, one of our member towns.
Was attacked with ransomware. The story said that they paid, I think, less than $5,000, which I thought they probably got off pretty cheap.
As compared to Atlanta.
The decision point often is either pay the ransomware. And it really depends on how good an IT infrastructure you have in place. You know, mm-hmm. are you able to recover because you have backups of all the data that might have been locked up by the thieves?
Mm-hmm.
And can you quickly restore it? I mean, the worst case scenario, which we've heard some cases of, where they've actually had to replace the actual server hardware.
The actual physical
The physical computers. Hardware and buy new hardware because the damage was so severe. So it's challenging. One of the things that kind of caught my eye in the article about West Haven, I believe mm-hmm. it was the mayor over there, said, why us? Why West Haven, Connecticut?
Yeah.
And the reality is these people don't care. They're looking for
opportunity.
They're opportunists. Exactly right. They're opportunists. So, you know, they're casing everybody's network to see if there's a weakness. And if they can take advantage of that weakness, it doesn't matter who you are.
So the ransomware that attacked West Haven, if that had happened a year ago in Seymour, would it have gotten through?
Potentially, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, like, you know, taking the steps that you've taken in town are not only smart and it's protecting data, but it's protecting money at this point.
Well, that's, you know, when we look at, when we were upgrading all of this, our IT systems and things like that, we tried to do it as smart as possible with the least amount of impact to our taxpayers. And we tried to find things that were cost neutral. And as our IT director was able to make these updates, we were able to find things like that. So again, we were able to really improve our IT without really stretching our IT budget.
Just smarter. Too much.
Yep. Yeah. And again, because we were able to maximize the economy of scale between the town and the Board of Education, and we got some impact. And when we started to look at this system, while it has a cost to it, you know, we were able to bring that cost down because of the town and the Board of Education working together and doing some different things. But one of the things we also discussed was the impact of an attack. And what is the actual cost of that versus what is the cost of putting the system in? And to be quite honest with you, it's much better to pay the money up front to have that protection and understanding as opposed to having to worry about, I mean, West Haven got off easy at $5,000, but to Dale's point, you know, these criminals are looking for easy targets to hit where they can get in and get some money. You know, I would rather pay the money that we did up front, not have to worry about.
A little
bit
of protection goes a long way.
Absolutely.
Well, and Kurt made a good point, too, about the offsets. Because technology in municipal budgets, in school budgets, oftentimes it just becomes a line item in the budget.
Yeah.
And once you get a line item in the budget, oftentimes it can stay there for years. So, for example, oftentimes schools will have a line item for antivirus software. Antivirus software, legacy antivirus software that we've been using for years from companies like Symantec or McAfee, it's only catching 50% of the virus activity, again, because of the problem that only catches what it recognizes as a virus signature. But people keep paying it year after year. So what we like to tell people is go through your budget, go through it line by line and say, Is there money there that's being spent in this line item for technologies that are obsolete?
Yeah.
And can you take that money then and apply it to upgrading your overall infrastructure?
I think it's very important to realize is that as technology progresses, you know, there's these scary technological things, ransomware and whatever, but it's also, but on the flip side, making people's lives easier, you know, more interactive with their town.
Well,
more interactive with their leaders.
Yep, absolutely.
The other challenge that municipalities, in particular your school systems, are facing is they are supporting a lot of devices, endpoint devices, many cases, many more than corporate America does. You know, a typical school system now, they all are going to this, you know, one-for-one technology, one device for every student.
So every student is on a laptop or
some sort of device, and in many cases they bring their own personal devices into the school district as well. So the ratio of devices to IT personnel in schools across the country is, I used to say it was 600 to 1. I'm guessing it's probably closer to 800 to 1 today.
Yeah.
Corporate America, it's probably closer to 100 to 1. So you're really stretching resources, the personnel in these towns and schools to the point where they're just spending their day, you know, just running around trying to, you know, fix laptops or, you know, finding out why the wireless access isn't working in a part of the building, or why is the internet down, or why can't I get email? And
just the day-to-day nuts and bolts kind
absolutely.
Of stuff.
Absolutely.
Leaving them little time to address international hackers.
That's absolutely right. It doesn't leave them a lot of time to do a lot of planning. And that's the other challenge, too, is that, you know, technology too often in the public sector is sort of treated as, well, that's a department. That's that person over there. But technology has become so pervasive in our lives, in how we deliver municipal services and how we educate our children, that the people that are actually building the infrastructure need to be a part of the decision-making process. And in many cases, they're not.
Okay. We're going to pause for 1 second here and do a station ID. You are listening to The Municipal Voice on WNHH LP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are streaming live on TuneIn Radio and newhavenindependent.org. We are also streaming live on Facebook Live. Just go to facebook.com/newhavenindependent. or just go to your Facebook page and look us up. All right.
Well, just to kind of build off of Dale's point, you know, I think the technology department is the one department that touches every other department in the town. And what you see is when your IT goes down, it brings the town to a halt.
Yeah.
So that means that residents that are coming in, whether it be on their lunch hour for something important, you know, some type of document with the town clerk, when they can't access that, that's direct frustration.
Yeah, they took time out of the day to go down to the town hall. They get there and they can't get their stuff done.
Right.
So they're not happy. Yeah.
So I think we have to put that priority on protecting the IT systems that we put in place to make sure that they're functioning well. And you know, now so many people can do things from their home. They can pay their taxes from home. Yep. They can get messages into me, to any of the staff from home. We want to make sure that that's functioning properly.
Functioning and secure.
Right.
Because people are giving you a lot of financial information.
Yeah, because if they lose...
It could impact them and the town.
Right, and if they lose confidence in that, they're going to stop using it, which that brings a whole new set of problems on for the town and the staff.
So when you come into the town like Seymour and you do an assessment, what are you looking at? And then from that, do you form like an action plan? Like here's the things we need to do going forward to implement these safety measures.
Well, the first thing we ask for is documentation.
Okay.
And in many cases, we don't get it because there isn't any. Oftentimes, a lot of the network infrastructure in a town, a city, again, a school, it has grown sort of.
Organically over the years.
Yeah, you know,
tack a little something on here and a little bit there.
We need a computer data drop in this classroom. We need one over there. We're building a new school. We're renovating a school, and we need to put some new technology in. So it was, in many cases, it was never looked at strategically.
It was just sort of piecemeal.
From the top down. Yeah. It was done piecemeal. So the first thing we do is ask for documentation because you know we don't want to break anything in the process of evaluating.
You don't
want to
make it worse
networks.
Before you make it better. Yeah.
You know, there's nothing worse than walking in and you're, you know, doing something with the equipment and somebody says, oh, the internet's down. And the first thing they do is look at you saying, what did you do?
Yeah.
So you want to be careful about not breaking anything. But I think more importantly, it's important to sit down and talk with the stakeholders, you know, and that's where, you know, Kurt, you know, sat at the table with us and looked at the evaluation that we did and really sort of rolled up his sleeves. And, you know, even though he may not understand the technology, he allowed his IT director, Rob Dyer, to sort of guide him in the process.
Yeah.
So it's important to engage with the stakeholders, say, you know, where do you really want to go? You know, what are you looking to fix here? Mm-hmm. Is it a cost problem? Is it a service problem? You have a lot of outages.
Yeah.
Are people happy with the way they're able to use the internet or use their personal device in town hall or in the school?
Yep.
And then go from there and sort of develop a roadmap for how to migrate them off of this legacy infrastructure. Now, in the case of Seymour, the fact that they did merge the school system and the town together in a single IT allows them to more strategically look at what are the goals for the town in general and develop and share a common infrastructure. So there's cost savings there. And the other aspect that we bring to the table is that we operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that most IT departments in the public sector don't do. At best,
you go home at the end of the day.
Home at the end of the day, but yet today everybody expects to be able to access everything 24 hours a day, seven days a week. So,
and the hackers certainly aren't taking any time off.
They're not taking any time off. That's exactly right.
So you were talking about the general vision for the town stuff, and that's sort of interesting to me. Beyond the scary threat of risk and hackers, what do you see in Seymour as going forward, like kind of the vision for what technology and infrastructure like that can do in a town?
We have a 10-year strategic plan that's constantly being updated. Mm-hmm. I actually have to report into the strategic planning committee every 6 months.
Okay.
Who updates. And technology improvements are a big piece of that. So they want us constantly looking at new technology that's coming out. How can we best use it to...
Yep.
improve the way we interact with the residents, the way that we produce the things that we need to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And having one IT department, I think, really gives us an advantage with that.
Yeah.
Because when Rob sits down, he's looking at everything globally. And yeah. it's not just what's best for education, what's best for, let's say, the finance department on the town side. Mm-hmm. He's just looking at all these pieces and how they can fit together. So what we've seen is some stuff that's good for the school system.
Yeah.
We've been able to bring over to the municipal side and use that to our advantage and vice versa.
So you're picking and choosing because you were combining kind of two sides of a coin, the best from both?
Yes. Yep.
And yeah. That's great.
Well, and it also allows you to share some of that infrastructure. The firewall that we put mm-hmm. in there is one physical appliance, but it appears as if it's two firewalls, one okay. for the town and one for the
board. That's two, what they call that, a virtual firewall?
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. And I believe in your case, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Rob also supports the public library too, doesn't he?
Yes, the library.
Oh, you brought that in. Was that formerly also a separate?
Well, no, the library kind of came along with the municipal.
Was already on the town side?
Yes. Yeah,
that's so great.
It's great to have, like I said, one hand kind of on understanding what everything is, how everything is going on,
yeah,
and is able to make those recommendations. And then when you get good business partners like Dale and his team,
yeah,
it just helps because they kind of immerse themselves and they understand what Seymour's needs are.
Yeah.
So when they're making these recommendations like this firewall, they're speaking from experience, they're speaking from understanding kind of the direction that we're trying to go, what our needs are.
And yeah,
I think it just makes it a more efficient process.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that in this, in 2018, that when people are looking at towns, not only the residents you already have, but people are looking to move to a town. You know, you look at school systems, you look at, parks and other municipal things like that. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that at this point, people have to consider the digital identity of a town. You know, if you go and you look at a town's website and it's outdated and old, mm-hmm. And you're a young, savvy kind of person coming into the state, because we always talk about bringing people back into the state, that having good IT, easy to understand information, is probably a plus to a town to attract new residents.
Oh, I think it absolutely is. I mean, little things like being able to pay your taxes online.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of years ago, we weren't able to do that in Seymour. And people do everything online. They do all their shopping online. They pay all their bills online. It's to the point where some people don't even write checks. They don't use cash. Everything's on their debit card.
Yeah.
And the fact that they couldn't make those payments of their taxes, they physically had to come into town hall to write a check or to mail it in, which was just not acceptable. So, we've been able to improve this. But to your point, people look at those types of things. They go to our website before they're coming to Seymour. And businesses as well. Businesses want to make sure
businesses,
that if I'm going to move to this town has its stuff in order. It knows what it's doing. It has a plan. It's moving forward. Take one community over another one. But Shelton, a lot of businesses are moving to Shelton and have been over because of the consistency of Shelton's performance over the last 20 years. They feel comfortable with that. We're trying to get Seymour to that exact same spot where we have this consistency, not only with our taxes, where our taxes aren't increasing, but we're providing these services and things that businesses need that will want, to come to Seymour.
Recently, all over the news was the Amazon HQ relocation mm-hmm. Those were a lot bigger towns than Seymour looking to get that. But, other businesses are also looking for places to go. And, they're looking for a technologically savvy, younger kind of demographic. They're looking for a town that has the infrastructure, has the, the high speed connections available.
And it's so hyper competitive that something small like that could be the thing that makes Seymour the place that they want to come as opposed to one of our surrounding communities.
Yeah. Yeah.
The managed services side of our business too is there's a lot of growth forecast there in that side of the business. In fact, one of our early customers in Seymour was and still is Basement Systems, which I believe is one of your larger taxpayers.
Taxpayers, and employers.
Basement Systems. I've certainly seen their stuff before.
Yeah. So it is important, and I think it's also important for people to recognize that the benefits of the internet, the benefits of having a well-planned infrastructure in a municipality, we're just beginning to see the advantages in terms of collecting data, what, you know, what is referred to as the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
a lot of your data collection now for everything from monitoring wells to road conditions to traffic conditions, has either moved or is planning to move to the internet.
Yeah.
So as we start to gather all of this information, it helps governments become more efficient. It helps you to plan how to do everything from plow the streets to pick up the garbage more
effectively. I mean, that's interesting. You're talking about some of the Internet of Things aspect of stuff, because, you know, we're talking about hackers getting in and messing with financial data and stuff. But at this point, it sounds like in some places they could actually get in and mess with heating, cooling systems of buildings. They could, you know, mess with dispatch.
Yeah, and that's why it's important that security be very much a part of that strategic planning process. You know, you might recall several years ago the Target hack that occurred, where they broke into the Target department store database and
millions of credit cards.
That came about because somebody identified one of their vendors, which was a HVAC heating cooling company, that had been contracted by Target to manage their store heating and cooling.
Okay.
And somebody compromised the system that they were using to access those controls, and that's how they broke into the Target database.
So millions of people got hacked, and Target got hacked. Millions of people were affected because hackers got in through Target's AC, basically through
their contractor who was responsible for their heating and cooling in the buildings. Absolutely.
So it wasn't even an IT mess up.
It was an IT mess up in the sense that, you know, the IT department was unprepared for it. Not only were they unprepared for it, but they didn't recognize it for an extended period of time. So, and we see that increasingly again in the public sector, where the vendors that you're contracting with are asking for access, internet access, but in many cases the vendor's own security is not up to, you know, the standards it should be.
Yeah.
So it creates opportunities for hackers to use ways to get into the networks.
Yep. Because then how that carries over, we have, you know, all of our town vehicles are GPSed.
Okay.
So if a hacker could get in, I mean, theoretically, they could see where all of our police cars were every part of the day. So if they wanted to
send their buddies over where the cops aren't.
Right.
Yeah.
There's things like that. Our public works trucks, it's good to have that information on an event like Thursday.
You want to know where the police and things are. That's a very good thing.
But, you know, you want to be careful who else.
Yeah. And you got to control that information.
Absolutely.
That's pretty interesting. So when you were talking before about the schools and you mentioned, you know, how many devices there are in here, you said a lot of students now are bringing in their own laptops and stuff. Does people bringing in their own outside devices also present challenges?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, because you can't say, you know, you only use this with this software. They're coming in with their laptop from home that they're surfing the net.
Absolutely.
With.
You know, and not only at home, but, you know, every time you use an access point in a public space, you run the risk of being infected by some sort of
virus. Like when you hook up to the free Wi-Fi at the coffee shop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and, you know, then you take those devices into your school, into your city hall, you can possibly then expose other people on that network to the virus that's on your device. So, I mean, what most schools do is they have and I'm not sure if you do over in the town hall, have a guest network.
Mm-hmm.
And the guest network is isolated from the rest of the town network, so that you're hopefully not going to compromise.
And that's what you
do. We have a secure network that everything runs on, and then we have a guest network.
Just keep them away from the sensitive data.
Everything else, exactly right.
Well, that's good. I know that you were working with CCM to help out some of our towns, and you're going to do complimentary security checkups if they're looking. So what would you be looking for if you were going to go into a town and do that?
Well, that's sort of how we got started with Seymour.
Yeah.
we basically will provide a equipment to collect data for typically a week to 2 weeks. And it again, it, we make sure that we don't break anything in the process of installing
it. Observing.
It's just observing. It's transparent to the users. And at the end of the collection period, then we would prepare a report, and we would sit down again with the stakeholders and go through it in conjunction with an analyst, in this case from Palo Alto Networks.
Okay.
And they can identify what kind of applications are running on your network. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges right now. Many network managers don't know what applications are running on their networks.
Like, it just varies from
because there's so
office
many,
to office, computer to computer, whatever.
And there's so many new applications that come out, particularly in schools, that, you know, we don't know about. And I say we because I'm looking at our ages here. Because a lot of these younger kids in high school, they're finding things that are out there that we have no idea.
We've never heard of.
We've never heard of them. And it's important that you identify those applications, because some of those applications could be used to introduce bad stuff into your network.
They leave vulnerabilities.
Exactly. So we can identify the applications. We can then identify where the attacks are coming from. I believe in the SLR, the security lifecycle review we did for Seymour, we saw attacks coming from Russia, from North Korea, from Seychelles, from former Eastern Bloc countries in Europe, from all over the world. And I would also add that when we do these, at least half of the attacks are coming from inside the U.S.
So yeah, it's not just
bad actors from around the world, foreigners. It's coming from everywhere.
Some homegrown hackers as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So we identify the applications. We identify what kind of bad stuff is happening at that point in time. We can identify if specific devices inside your network are already infected.
Mm-hmm.
You may need to take some remedial action. If at the end of that process, somebody says, "Hey, thank you very much. That's great. I'm glad you gave me this information." We shake hands and say, "Okay, well, thank you very much." If they say, "Hey, we need to do something about this," which in the case of Seymour, Kurt made sure that they did something about it, then we'll take it to the next to the next step.
You made sure. So what was, as far as the process of getting this to go ahead and do this approved, was that like a hard sell for you, or?
It actually was not a hard sell.
Okay.
Because I can lean back to that 10-year strategic plan where we talk about the improvements in technology, and you know, the Board of Selectmen, the Board of Finance could see the steps. So
everyone's already
taking.
Agreed that these are things that need to be addressed. Yeah, so it's a very easy way to pitch it.
Well, particularly when you're talking about security now. We've taken all these steps. We've done all this work to get our infrastructure where it needs to be. Now we need to protect it the right way. Mm-hmm. So it was a very easy transition, particularly when you're showing that report that they will produce, you know, after watching what happens. It's kind of eye-opening to even, I'm not an IT person in any stretch of the imagination. I have to depend on Rob and Dale and people like that. But it's very easy to see. The average person can look at that report and realize that it's not good.
Yeah.
And that we're either going to be paying now, or we're going to be paying substantially more down
the
road.
More. Yeah.
So it just comes down to budget management and what's the best way to spend your dollars. And you know, in Seymour, we decided the best way to spend our dollars was to protect our data, to protect our systems. And it was kind of a no-brainer for us.
Yeah. So we've mostly been talking about this at the municipal level, but is there anything that could be done at the state level by the state to help protect both towns and residents in these sort of situations?
Well, I'll punt that one to Dale.
I was going to look to you with an answer.
Well, I guess maybe, you know, with the Nutmeg Network, if there's some way that they can put some type of security there that kind of spreads out over towns and cities. I don't even know if that's possible.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a best practices or something that, you know, towns and cities need to follow.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, well, Dale, have you heard anything from the state at all? Like, is this concern at that level?
We work very closely. Kurt mentioned the Nutmeg Network, which is an outgrowth of something called the Connecticut Education Network.
Yeah.
Which has been a state initiative for the past 15 years.
Okay.
Where the state has built out a fiber network to every single school system in the state.
Well, that's good.
High speed, one gigabit minimum to every school system. and I believe now has probably built into well over half the town halls in the state.
Yep.
It also connects our police departments and fire departments.
So that's a pretty big system.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very big system.
It needs to be protected.
It needs to be protected. We work very closely with mm-hmm. them because we have to, because we're interfacing in most cases the town networks to
yeah.
the NetMeg network. So our tech team works very closely with the CN tech team. We have suggested to the leadership in Hartford mm-hmm. that they might want to consider working closer with the private sector, because we believe the private sector companies like ourselves can help the state take that whole network to another level.
Yeah.
Given the financial challenges that the state is facing, we think that the private sector could help them leverage what they've already invested in, what yep. the state has already invested in, without having to go back to the well, so to speak, again to get additional funding from the state assembly. So that we shall see in the new administration.
That's true. Yeah, we've got some new stuff coming up here.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. Well, I think that's about it for today, but I'd like to thank you both for coming on. It's been a great conversation. Let me
pitch. Just, you know, a lot of times the smaller towns think that we can't afford this, or this is not something it's too big for us. You know, it doesn't make sense for us. I would encourage my fellow first selectmen, for the smaller size towns, that it's something you should absolutely take a look at.
Yeah.
At least give, whether it be Dale and his team or someone else, mm-hmm. an opportunity to come in and just offer this to give you an understanding of what's truly going on.
Yeah.
And then giving you the opportunity to weigh out what makes sense and what doesn't. We're all going into budget season now. You know, with that coming up in January, now would be a good time to just take that quick look and see, what the cost would be for you and in your town based on what your needs are,
mm-hmm.
and see if it's something that makes sense to fit in your budget. Like I said, it's better to pay up front a cost that you understand, as opposed to if something were to happen. You know, they're not just going after the big towns. They're going to start to go after the smaller towns. Yeah,
17 million is a big hit for Atlanta, but, 1 million is a big hit if you're a lot
of small towns. I mean, Seymour would struggle if we had we're fortunate to have a good fund balance and things, but still mm-hmm. $1 million would be a big hit to us.
Yeah.
And I would rather spend what I spend, to protect the data every year versus having to pay the $1 million. And I can assure you it's substantially less.
An ounce of prevention.
That's right.
That's right. All right. Well, let's see. The state of Connecticut has work cut out for it, and a new batch of legislators to get it done. Thank you to our guests, Kurt Miller, First Selectman of Seymour, and Dale Bruckhart of Digital Back Office, for informing us on the IT challenges that face municipalities and what you're doing to keep residents' information safe. The Municipal Voice is a co-production of CCM and WNHH 103.5 FM. Kevin Maloney is our executive producer. Christopher Gilson is our producer. Harry Draws on the boards. And I am Matt Ford, your host. See you next time.